He's about 455 yards away. He's going to hit about a 2-iron, I think.
This is the School of Motion podcast. Come for the MoGraph, stay for the puns.
Where can I channel my creative energy, you know, and where can I use these skills that I've developed and not always be on client work, which I still love. I love client work. I love my clients and I love the community and industry wholeheartedly. But when you reduce it down to its worst description, it's we make commercials. And I hate that because I'm an artist. I'm not editing like the random medical new thing that's out, blah, blah, blah. You know, I don't want people to skip past my work, but that's the easiest way for people to understand what we do. So we kind of always circle back to it. So yeah, from here, it's like, how do I keep pushing and growing? And as an artist, it's subjective. So I think there's no cap so that you can go up and up and up. And I plan to continue to refine.
Motioneers. A lot of times we start these podcasts already in the conversation, but today, just to give a little bit of context to what I think is maybe one of the most important conversations we could have as working motion designers, for people listening, I bet you've felt this way before. Before I announce the guest, I just want to read a post from Instagram that really caught my attention, mostly because this artist has, if not the best, one of the best working office spaces you could possibly dream of. But two, the text that was attached to this really stuck with me. From the moment I read it, I've been thinking about it, and I'm so happy to finally have Reese Parker on the podcast. But before we start talking to him, I'll do my best job of trying to read it in his voice, but I just want to read this post. And while you hear this, think if you've gone through something similar. Now, you can go to Reese Parker CO on Instagram and look at this as well. You'll see an awesome office space with tons of really cool decorations on the wall. I think what I'm going to now kind of adopt as my life motto to just draw shit. I love that. But let me read what was attached to this post that really stuck with me. It said, I've been reflecting a lot on where I go from here. I work a lot and I notice I get lazy when I'm not really passionate about a project. I don't think of myself as very emotional, but as an artist, my best work is fueled by my emotional connection to the job. As I've gotten more comfortable in this small thing I've built and reflect on goals and milestones along the way, I feel more and more lost. The path isn't as clear from here. So I think maybe I'm where I was always wanting to be, and now I don't have to grind as hard. In theory, that's comforting and sounds healthy, but for me, it feels limiting to my growth, and that gets me bummed out. Maybe it's time to depart from a solo venture, or maybe that's not appreciating what I have right now. Maybe I should focus on teaching what I've learned, or maybe that's just adding noise to an increasingly saturated market and my own ego. Maybe I should just apply at Walmart. I hear they have great benefits. I don't have answers, but I'll get there. Reese Parker, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you. You did a great job reading that.
Oh, yeah. Thanks. I think it's probably because I have felt like this many times in my career. I may or may not have felt that a couple of times during this pandemic, but I think it is enigmatic of the state that we are just in motion design. There are so many people who are making their way through this career arc, through this journey for the first time. And I don't know about you, but like, to be honest, I don't have any mentors to see how to stick the landing, I guess is the best way to say it. No one's really finished a career in motion design because we're all kind of like first generation passing through. That's just a long way of saying, let's talk about like figuring out how to get there, where there actually is. Maybe first off, you could just tell me like, where was your head when you wrote this? Like what caused you to post this? Because this is pretty vulnerable. I think a lot of people look to you as like an amazing illustrator, a great animator, a director, someone who's, as it says here, got their shit together. But this is like a really, really like vulnerable insight from you. Where was your head when you posted this?
It's interesting. I try as often as is authentic to be vulnerable. I think we just had another baby. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's probably kind of where my headspace was, is like, whenever big life milestones happen, it's, at least for me, it's more reflective. Yeah. And so I think just in that, you know, week or two or three, I was just kind of thinking about where I am and where I was going and where I started. And yeah, I noticed that my goals have been passed and I don't know where I'm, like, you know, as I wrote in the post, I look forward and it's not as like less trotted, right? The path isn't as carved. Yeah. And so I wrote that and posted it just on a Saturday. And it's funny because I don't post on Saturdays. Mm-hmm. So it really, the post was just because I had a thought. And then it kind of like, it resonated with a lot more people than I thought it would, honestly.
Yeah, it has like almost 2,800 likes, which is a not insignificant number in terms of people probably like raising their hand. And if you're listening to this saying, yeah, me too. I have no idea. I have no idea where to go. They may not be at the same place in their career as you or I, but there are all these questions, right? Like the landscape has changed so much. And I guess like the last 12 to 18 months anyway, the options have gotten even more. There's more options and more places to go, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's liberating for everybody. It can also mean that it's either confusing or like stultifying. It actually stops you. Like you don't know what to do.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really interesting thing too. From my perspective, after having maybe hit some certain milestones, you start to go, oh, okay. I never thought about where I would be when I'm here. I never thought about, you know, where to go from here. And I don't feel like I'm done.
Right.
So it really is interesting. And so many perspectives sprouting from it too. And not that everyone necessarily like interpreted my situation 100%, which wasn't my intention anyway, but it was interesting to hear from so many other people's perspectives, kind of their solution to their thing, you know, at their point in their career.
Well, I think somebody, I think it was, who was it? I think Seb Curry said something that I thought was really interesting.
Oh, I
as
love
a response
him.
Where yes. Let me see if I can find it, because it stuck with me too when I went through, and maybe we'll get to this eventually, because this is one of those things where I think we're guilty of this at School of Motion and all the other, I don't think of myself as a thought leader, but somebody who talks about this a lot, that we're really guilty of what I've started calling stargazing, right? Like we really do sell the dream of, oh man, you want to get to Buck. You want to get to Gunner, you want to get to Golden Wolf, Oddfellows, Ordinary Folk. You want to be a director, you want to be an art director, you want to work with the clients, you want to start your own shop. And I think like everything kind of stops at that point, because there's so much work, at least in motion design, just to get to be accepted and to be recognized, to be able to get to those kinds of places. But like you said, like, great, maybe you get there. What next, right? Like that happens.
Right.
But I think Seb said, dude, you are missing the point. The exciting part starts when you don't know what to do. And maybe we can dive more into that a little bit. But I think before we get much further, you've talked a lot about like where you're at in your career and like what you've accomplished. But maybe we can give context to people. I never like asking people how old they are, but I'd rather ask people, how long have you been working in the industry? Because I think that might help people kind of understand like where you're coming from. And maybe if you want to just give people a little, like, you know, the elevator pitch of like where you started and how you got to like today.
Yeah. So I started in 2016. Like that was the first time I learned about After Effects. Previous to that, I had experience in what was called Flash at the time. It's now Adobe Animate. And I was, you know, animating on sticky notes with my friends and kind of drawing my whole life. So I guess maybe five, coming up on 6 years, which isn't long. I understand that, but also, I don't know, I attribute a lot of my success to my practicing previous to entering into, like, you know, calling myself a professional.
Yeah.
And so growing up, it was, you know, I was just creative minded. And that came out in a lot of different mediums. You know, dance, music, piano. I played piano for a long time, but mostly drawing and skateboarding. Mm-hmm. I just used what I had, and what I had was pencils at school, you know, so I would fail a math test and then flip it over and draw a portrait of the teacher on the back, and she would hang it up on the wall, even though I failed it. I remember that happening like a lot growing up. That was always kind of my thing, or my creative output was like graphite illustration. Anywhere from like really sketchy, kind of cartoony, all the way up to photoreal portrait work. And then, you know, how I got to this industry was interesting. I mean, I didn't go to school. I didn't go to, you know, the SCADs or any other higher education. I graduated high school kind of barely. I was sort of a unfocused student. I wasn't necessarily like bad at it. I got by pretty easily, but I just didn't care. And I think that was because I was disconnected from the expectation at the time of where I was supposed to go. I didn't understand that there were careers that were suited for people like me. The only thing I knew was graphic design, and I tried it. I had an intern, or I'm sorry, I had a shadowing, right? In high school, you do job shadowing.
Right.
And so I did one for a graphic designer who worked for the city of Bellevue, which is close to Seattle. And I just remember it being so horribly boring. And looking back now, I understand the value of it, obviously. And I think he was doing type work, right? And And I was an illustrator at heart. You know, I wanted to draw dragons and Spider-Man and you know, all this cool stuff. And he was like working with fonts and I just didn't get it. So that was like enough for me to not do that. So I didn't want to go to school because that was the only thing I knew. So I'm kind of floating around for a lot of years after high school, maybe 3-4 years. And I'm really focusing on skateboarding and I get pretty good. But in skateboarding, if you're not like pro by the time you're 23, then you kind of missed it.
Whew, 23, really?
Yeah, early. I mean, kids are 13 and they're like breaking records and it's insane.
It's crazy. The rubber knees don't last much past like 23, no. 24, 25.
And if you have like a career into your, you know, late 30s, early 40s, you're like kind of an icon just for that. It's crazy. You know, I was 22 and I was flying out to California to compete. I competed in amateur contests and this was like the big one because I knew I was coming up kind of like, I'm getting old. I don't really have any other prospects. I don't have, you know, in terms of a resume for like a professional career, I didn't have anything going for me. So right before this big contest that was like, maybe I could start something up in skateboarding. I remember I broke my heel. I was doing like a big thing off of jumping down a big thing. So that was like really earth shattering because it meant that I did try to compete, but I couldn't do it well, obviously. Yeah.
It's like drawing with your left hand.
Yeah, exactly. So that was big. And when I got back from that, I really, really had to readjust in like my entire life. Cause up until that point, that was who I was. That's who I identified as. So I just said to myself, like, I love this thing, but I know that it can't carry me into my future successfully. Like I want a family. I want to be able to provide. I want to, milestone goals. I'm not 18 anymore. You know, I want to kind of mature out of this phase of life. And I had older friends that really hit that home. I was still young at the time. I mean, 22, you're not old, but I had 30-year-old friends that were kind of doing the same thing. And I was like, I don't want to be that. So I kind of just hit the pavement and I was like, all right, I like drawing. I can kind of animate. I can kind of use a computer. Like, let's figure something out. I ended up finding an internship at a creative startup for free, meaning unpaid. And they wanted me to basically do anything creative. So I was doing t-shirt designs, logo animation. And then eventually that led to, they needed an explainer and I didn't know what that was. And so, yeah, once I figured out kind of that was a thing, I just started studying it like crazy. Cause I thought it was one of the coolest things I'd ever seen. And some of my earliest influences were Seth Eckert. He runs The Furrow, the studio. Mm-hmm. Back before that, he was doing jobs for Facebook and Coca-Cola. And just like, I was so inspired by like, this guy's just a solo kind of an artist. And he's doing huge, what I've like perceived as ginormous jobs for big brands. And he was doing cool transitions and smooth moves and all that stuff. So that was where I started. Sorry, that was so long.
I love it though. No, I think it's great. It gives me a lot of context. It would be very easy for us to just go to your website and be like, okay, let's look at who you, oh, whoa, look who this guy's worked for. Amazon, Apple,
right. Android,
Facebook, Google. But even like the studios, right? Like Hornet, Buck, Oddfellows, Giant Ant, Ivy, Fur, like it goes on and on. But I think there's a lot of people who are looking, I guess, like metaphorically up at someone like you and said like, oh man, if you've done all this and you've only been working, you know, for not that long, you're still, you know, really young in terms of the grand scheme of things and you're questioning it. I feel like there's a really interesting connection to what you were saying, like looking at skateboarders that were in their 30s,
right?
When you're 22, right? Like at some point, do you start questioning like, okay, well, if he's already, I don't think the word is burnt out because I don't think that matches to what.
No, yeah.
There's a lot of discussion about burnout, but I don't think that's it. It's more of kind of like in some ways, a better and sometimes a harder question. It feels like it's a more existential question of totally. Like, great, so you've hit a pinnacle and no one knows what the pinnacle is after that. And you know you can go a lot of different ways, right? Like you said, you can teach, you can give back, which you already are doing, right? Like you already are doing like Q&As, you're already teaching Skillshare, you're doing giveaways, you're already doing a lot of that. But I feel like in our industry, there's still even like a stigma to that of like, oh, they're teaching. They're like halfway towards retirement or they're in that can't do. So they teach, which that whole notion, I feel like needs to be put to rest in general, but specifically in motion design. But you know, like, I think there's probably a lot of people sitting here like, whoa, what do I do? If this guy's this good and he's working with this many people and he's kind of questioning what to do next, you know, like what's in it for me? You know, like you said, they may be doing their first explainer right now. They may be working for a company that they're the only motion designer at a company doing a bunch of other things.
Right.
I wonder right now, there's a lot of questions to ask, but I go back to, I was at the first Camp Mograph and I got to do the the first like the fireside chat. And I kind of threw away what I was going to talk about. I had a whole presentation and then I changed my mind like right before because I had a lot of good conversations during that day. And I really asked like, I was going to talk about like my career and stuff I've learned. And I decided I just wanted to be a conversation. And I asked three questions and people may be sick of me hearing me say this, but I kind of almost want to ask you the same three. Is that okay? We didn't plan this, but I'm going to just toss them at you. First off, I ask people kind of just the general sense of like, do you feel imposter syndrome? Like Reese Parker works for all these people. One of the best character animators in motion design working today. Great illustrator. Amazing branding for like what you do. Do you feel imposter syndrome?
I think I have in specific roles, but not others. As an animator, no. But only because it always felt so natural. Mm-hmm. I think an illustrator a little bit because I started as an animator. So that's how people saw me. So when I tried to illustrate, even though that's where my real roots are, it felt a little bit more like I was like, oh, kind of just pretending here.
Right.
And then, you know, I got hired and it solidified a little bit more. And then I think the most it's been is for directing, only because I do see myself as a director, but I've had an interesting path to that. Mm-hmm. I don't have any studio experience. I don't have any agency experience. I've never been repped. I'm not anyone's roster. Nobody's marketing me. My own marketing has gotten me here. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of an independent route. But that being said, I've led jobs for Microsoft and Amazon and like real things. And I've had to staff up and expand when I need to. And really interesting. And I've learned a lot from things like that. But I think that would be the biggest, because it's, you know, you hear of these other names that are repped and they're on Hornet or they're elsewhere. And they've kind of always been the director, or they've been a creative director at Buck or Oddfellows. And you know what I mean? It just sort of solidifies them based on their history, their work history. But that's not something that I had.
Right. In some ways, there's kind of a promoted natural progression of what you're supposed to do. You go to the school, you do something, you get known for it, you double down on it. You work for a in quotes, famous creative director. You either stay at that place, you go to another shop, you get your shot, and then you're off to the races.
Exactly. Yeah.
I want to follow back up on that later because I think you said something really interesting. Just I always call it branding, but also I think like just the way you've marketed yourself is very novel. Mm. I don't know if other people really have noticed if they haven't been in that sphere of like discovering you and then following you and then seeing you doing things and then giving you shots at stuff. But the second question, the Camp Mograph question, because I think it's interesting that you, in a lot of ways, I feel like this is what musicians go through too, right? Like when you said imposter syndrome, that you didn't feel it with the thing that was like your natural kind of love or thing that just came, you know, intuitively to you. But the moment you stepped out of whatever kind of like story that you crafted for yourself, you started feeling that. I think there's probably a lot of people who feel that way. There's something they dig and it's just the thing they find flow or they love it, or they'd be doing it if they weren't getting paid for it. But the moment they start, because in my mind, to be totally honest, I always think of you as an illustrator first.
Oh, interesting.
Because I just think like, well, I mean, I know you're an amazing animator, but when I think about what, as a creative director, I think of people first for, a lot of times it's, I think of them that, what they do that I can't find anywhere else.
Oh, okay.
And I really feel, I think you're a great animator, but I always go back to like your illustration style feels super unique and that I would cast you for projects if I could because of your illustration style first. So in my mind, just top of mind, I'm like, man, he's just got this look that doesn't feel like anyone else, that like if I had the right project, he would be the perfect person for.
That's really nice.
You'd also know how to animate it and you could probably lead a team of animators, but first and foremost. So it's funny hearing those disconnects between where you feel the imposter syndrome or insecurity and then where like the world around you views you.
Totally.
But the second question I asked everybody there was, you know, like at whatever time you found motion design and you got into it, you probably had an expectation or a goal or a hope. Are you where you thought you would be when you got into motion design? Did you have any kind of preconceived notion and have you connected to that?
I'm way past where I ever thought I'd be. Yeah, way, way beyond it. I'm past what I even thought was possible.
Right.
And still kind of feel that way based on just talking to peers. But yeah, when I first started, it was like, I was so naive and so young and so just disconnected from anything real. So I was like, I just need to pay my bills. Mm-hmm. At the time, my wife was covering the bills. She was so supportive and really sweet, and I could have done it without her. But yeah, that was it. It was like, if I could just pay the bills, then fine. I didn't know how to charge. I didn't know anything. Yeah. And then since then, obviously, as the years went on, my goals changed. And as I met more people in the industry, that's what's so cool about this industry too, is like, for the most part, I've been like arms open. Everybody's ready to give me advice and hugs and, mm-hmm. and support. And they really have led the way for me to understand what is possible. And then from there, I can set the goal and then go hit it.
Right.
Yeah. So it's ever changing. But at the beginning, I had no perception of what was even doable at all.
I think that's possibly like what for like, there's a big group of people to say first generation motion designers, because there's people who are 15 years older than me and probably people who are 10 years younger than me that I still lump into that group because I haven't made it. I mean, there are no like degree programs for motion design. There were barely right. like classes that taught like After Effects or, you know, like illustration in the sense that it could be set up for commercial projects or for animation, you know, for motion design. But there's also, I think, a huge disconnect on the other direction for people who are living in the world where everything is codified, right? Like motion design equals Cinema 4D plus After Effects. You're either an animator, you're a designer, you can go freelance, you can go staff, you can do one-a-days, you can do NFT. Like it totally. Feels very like, it feels like there are very like well-trodden paths at the starting point for people who are listening now that are getting started, right? You know, like if you're listening to School of Motion podcast, odds are that like you're probably in the earlier part of your career and there are ways to go, right? Like there's order and structure.
Absolutely.
But there is that point where like everybody catches up really quickly to us, I think. I'm lumping you in with right. us, Reese, but like
right.
people just starting now, it doesn't, because the way the industry is now, because there's so much work, because it's global, there's so many screens, there's so many needs for what we do, you can catch up to where Reese is right now or where I'm at now, like probably much faster than either of us got there.
Totally.
Because there's so many more channels to learn. There's so many places to try stuff out. It's easier to network. People know what motion design is when you explain it for the most part. So I feel like there's a lot of people catching up to us that are also like at their own personal pinnacles that are like, okay, cool. What next? And that goes to the third question I asked at Camp MoGraph. So just to set the stage, right? So I'm sitting in the middle of this room. There's probably, I don't know, 60, 70, 80 people. And I instead of talking for an hour and a half, I just started asking these questions, right? So that first one, imposter syndrome, almost everybody put their hands up, which was great to see. Then I asked like, are you where you thought you'd be? Probably like 20% of the people, maybe 30% of the people put their hands up. But I asked them this last question and it was actually shocking to me. I asked everybody, so cool. It's fine. You just saw that everybody can be imposters. We're all imposters in some way because no one's ever done this. No one's where they necessarily want to be or thought they could be. But my big question is, are you happy right now in motion design? And before you answer that, like almost no one put their hands up.
Wow.
In like a room of 60, 70 people. And maybe people at first were kind of confused about it. And people did like be like, well, what do you mean by happy? And I'm like, I think the fact that you even have to ask what do you mean by happy is a very eye-opening thing. So
yeah.
I ask you, I think I know the answers, but like, are you happy with where you're at in motion design right now?
Yeah, I would say conclusively that I am happy. And I think my wife would back me up on that too. But I don't mean to like sound contrarian or anything either. It's interesting to hear their responses. I think generally my attitude in terms of happiness comes from like, I always remember my roots, like, you know, which for me wasn't school and kind of linear, right? For me, it was, I'm shoveling sand 8 hours a day. I'm cleaning Taco Bell bathrooms. I'm working retail and I'm terrible at it. My bosses all hate me. I'm lazy. It's like, that was my reality and was very, very real. And so knowing where I'm at now, it's an impossibility. And my family, my closest family are people that know me from my past life. They don't even know how to interpret where I'm at now in terms of like success outwardly, but inwardly as well as an artist. Right. It's like they don't get what I do and they don't know how I did it. So they just call it luck, which in some ways it probably was. But I always remember kind of where I was. And that keeps me happy even through questions and thoughts. And, you know, when things aren't always as clear, I'm still like, you know, always super, super grateful.
Right. I mean, I think those are... It was kind of a charged question to ask a crowd, but I think it also was just to open people's eyes. And I thank you for that. Cause I think I have a big difference between like two or three different words. Like I feel like I'm almost always happy in the industry because I understand like, you know, where I could be otherwise.
Right.
And I think there's also the idea of being satisfied.
Yeah.
And maybe that's the difference where you're at as well. That like happy to be where I'm at, grateful for the opportunities. I can see that there's a lot of things to do. You know, it's not like VFX where the industry is, not that it's shutting down, but it's very limited what you can do and the future for a lot of people. But I feel like maybe this is me, maybe this isn't you, I'm just projecting, but I feel like I'm eternally, like, to some degree, like, unsatisfied, because I know I could, there's more to be done and I don't know, like, exactly which way to go.
Yeah.
And I think that might be the clue to what a lot of people were feeling, was that they were like, I technically, if I thought about it, I fit the definition of happy, but there's still something ticking in the back of my head that, like, it's not enough. And maybe that's just like, you're not satisfied. You can be one or the other, you can be both, but it's okay. But just having the word to, like, describe it, do you feel like where you're feeling that you described on Instagram, do you think it has a certain amount of like, oh, I'm still, the fire's not out? Because you said, I'm not over, I'm not done. Are you fighting to try to find a way to be more satisfied with, like, what you get back from the work or what you're doing day to day?
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm plotting for sure. You know, and I've got a little bit more resources now. So it's where can I channel my creative energy, you know, and where can I use these skills that I've developed and not always be on client work, which I still love. I love client work. I love my clients and I love the community and industry wholeheartedly. But when you reduce it down to its worst description, it's we make commercials.
Yes.
Right. Yep. And I hate that because I'm an artist. I'm not editing, you know, like the random medical new thing that's out, blah, blah, blah. You know, I don't want people to skip past my work, but in reality that I don't know, in some cases, not all cases, right? But that's the easiest way for people to understand what we do. So we kind of always circle back to it. So yeah, from here, it's like, how do I keep pushing and growing? And as an artist, it's subjective. So I think there's no cap. So that you can go up and up and up. And I plan to continue to refine. But in terms of satisfaction, yeah, I definitely wouldn't say I'm always satisfied. When I have something I'm really invested in, you know, it's easier to be, and then that ends and then you move on, right?
Exactly. I think it's almost like you were in the room that I'm talking about, but I can't hold it, because that was, that's where the conversation led to be honest. Is like, after I asked people like, are you happy? And everybody kind of had their kind of like, maybe not, or what's happy mean or all that. One of the things I asked was like, well, how do you tell people what motion design is? And almost everyone, to a point, struggled or was embarrassed or disappointed with what you just said of like, well, we make stuff for other people to sell stuff. And I that's one of the reasons why I joined School of Motion, to be honest, because I feel like that is ultimately going to always put us into the position that you find yourself in, or I found myself in before I joined School of Motion, is that I think there's a lot of heavy lifting to be done to explain or to agree or to understand that motion design, in like a bigger picture in my mind. So the way I always point this, like what I responded to when someone said, oh, we make commercials or we make stuff for other people. What is different between what we do and we feel kind of bummed out or disappointed about it in the grand scheme of things compared to someone who sits and animates all day?
Right.
For TV shows or for film or for somebody who gets up on a stage and shoots stuff and makes visual effects for it. Because I think in my mind, and this is probably crazy, but in my mind, I think that instead of motion design being like in, you know, like in a college catalog, there's like three classes called motion design, and they're like a subset of a subset of a subset in a degree program. In my mind, I think motion design is actually the umbrella that everything else fits under, in terms of like gaming, that could be motion design. Film,
yeah,
that could be motion design. Animation, photography, type, color, painting, and any of that stuff.
Right.
Still sits underneath like what motion designers do. And I challenge it. I think motion design is more a way of thinking about solving things creatively than it is we make stuff for other people. Because I think, and I've done this, right? Like I've worked at jobs where I've hired the best Houdini artist, the best visual effects compositor while they're in a break between jobs to work on a project. And they worked for 2 weeks and they could barely get anything done, because they work and think in a very specific niche way. And I would have to, and this has happened more times than I can count, to where I stopped doing it. But then if I would bring in two motion design generalists, right? Like a great animator who can also design, and somebody who understands story, and they can get in a premiere and cut, but they can also do some storyboards and maybe even like do some audio because they're just interested in everything. Like, you know, I saw in your studio, you have a keyboard off to the side, right next to you, right? Motion designers, for some reason, have a way of thinking that you can put two or three of them in a room and they can outpace like an entire department for most projects. And that to me is what motion design is. It's a way of thinking where you're like, what can I do to get this done in a way, because we have to, because we never have the biggest teams, we never have enough time, but we know lots of different ways to approach problems.
I love that.
I wish we talked about motion design in a proud way to say, look, and then that opens the door to being like, well, you know what? What does a motion designer who makes their own animated short, what does that look like? You know, like it versus, you know, five animators from Pixar getting together, just, or you know what? I'm going to make a toy line. What does that look like? I wish we could get more motion designers like out of the restraints that we put on ourselves, because I feel like there's a lot of shame in what we do. We don't feel good about it. Maybe we're making stuff for companies we don't believe in, or one of the hardest things, I don't know if you feel this way, Reese, but like one of the hardest things is the stuff you make disappears faster than it took you to make it most of the time.
That's one of the biggest things for me. Yeah. Less so like, oh, it's commercials, because I agree with that sentiment, but I don't necessarily like 100% believe that. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's avenues, short film and whatever, but regardless kind of a what you put out, it is the internet.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's like dead in a day, and something like a game or a movie can live on for years or generations. And it's interesting to see our work. Yeah. Months at a time, just like, okay, move on to the next. Mm-hmm. I remember early on in my career, that was one of the hardest. I remember having cycles of depression after I would finish a job, because I was so invested in the quality of it. And then when it dropped, it was like maybe a naive expectation on my end, like, this is going to blow up. I'm going to get respect or blah, blah, blah. And maybe it would happen kind of, and maybe not. But the reality was, time to move on to the next one. And it wasn't something I was familiar with, and it was really hard at the time. Since then, it's gotten easier, but
That risk versus reward ratio. There's probably a better word than risk, but like, just that's the first thing I think about is when you put in the, you know, 60, 70 hours, or you do the last weekend push to get something out, and then it's out there. And probably what you're talking about is before there was like social media and Instagram and Twitter and metrics to literally put whether or not your stuff moved the needle.
Right.
Before it was just kind of like, well, if my friend group saw it and said something, like, that feels good.
Right.
Now there's like a literal meter on your work, and it can be completely depressing to think. And then add in like NFTs as well, where the world just, there's not a one-to-one for this was so difficult, look how difficult it was, and then look how many people responded to it, right? There's not a correlation to like what we think of as good work necessarily to what succeeds out there, for better or worse.
Yeah.
But like, there's so many even more like limiting factors on like, why did I do that? You know, like,
totally.
I spent all this time and money and effort and energy and maybe compromise time with my family, or, you know, time out on my own to just make this thing. And then like in the end, what does it do? Maybe it helps your day rate. Maybe enough of those jobs, you can say I'm $50 a day more, right? Like,
yeah.
I feel like there's natural stopping points in people's careers where they get to a place and they can either get comfortable or just keep doing it. And it's just rinse and repeat. Like, I did this job. Cool. What's the next one? I did this job. Cool. What's the next one? Or, you know what? I'm going to try to take a year to figure out how to become a director. And that time's exciting, right? Like that hockey stick growth. But then you hit it. And I don't know if you feel this way, but at some point, after you direct four or five things, regardless of how many different clients, at some point you're like, this is starting to feel the same. I'm hitting the same roadblocks. I'm hitting the same limitations. Maybe you could talk a little bit. I'm really interested in, and I think this goes into my fascination with your branding and your marketing, but you, like you said, you weren't necessarily like picked up by, you know, like a rep, or you weren't at a studio that said, oh, you know what? You can design and animate. Maybe we should have you, you know, direct this little piece, and then, you know, you move up the charts.
Right.
How did you get to the position to actually be thought of as a director?
Good question. Before I jump into that, just a little note on what you were saying previously. I think things coming and going so quickly is one of the reasons why I pay so close attention to my branding and my website specifically. Mm-hmm. You get questions a lot these days that are, do we even need a website anymore? Do we even blah, blah, blah? And I always get like put off by it, to be honest, because for me, that's my time capsule. Like, okay, there might not be that many people going there anymore. I understand that. And there are platforms now where everybody's eyes are, and those are great, but they're not the same. It's not as thorough or as thoughtful. And when I'm hiring somebody personally, I always go to the website every time.
Yeah.
Because it tells me that that artist cares. And if they don't have one, then where am I supposed to look? Just this little loop, like, it's riskier for me as somebody who's hiring. But again, as on a more of a personal note, it's where I look back and kind of remember where I was. Things go so quick. They're come and go. So a year later, 2 years later, I'll go to my site and, oh, I remember that project. I'll look at it and be like, oh, this was cool. This wasn't, whatever. But that's something that's really, really valuable to me that I think is dying. And that makes me sad.
Yeah, I think it is too. And it just for the audience to understand, I don't remember where I first encountered you, Reese, but I do remember the times when through your marketing and your branding, you connected with me. And I'm technically wearing my Time Lord t-shirt right now. For anybody who doesn't know what that is, Battle Axe.
Shout out Adam.
Adam Plouffe. I think I was in the same situation as you. I've been talking to him forever. Like, yeah, it's so cool that you can bring Illustrator into After Effects easily. But what about us people who hate Illustrator and want to do the same thing with Photoshop and frame by frame? And he was working on what became Time Lord for a long time.
Yeah.
And I know I was testing. And then there was one day where he's like, hey, I think it's almost ready. Take a look at this. And it was the promo video you made. And immediately I was like, oh my God, that has to be Reese, right? There's no one else that does that. But I was like, this should be like a TV series. There should be a way to take like this tone and this vibe and this animation style and like do something more with it. Like
I
have a blank black hat that I'm about to put the Time Lord logo and patch on.
Yeah.
So I can wear that with my shirt. And I can't tell you how many times people stop me like, what the heck is Time Lord? Don't know anything about After Effects. They think it's like a heavy metal band.
But totally.
I feel like between like what you and Adam did, like Adam sent out like a gift package of like, oh, here's a cool t-shirt and here's like, you know, the logo and as like a patch. But that has always been in like the Reese Parker game plan. Like one of my favorite things I've ever received, and I'm looking at them on my bookshelf right now, is that you send out postcards with really dope illustrations and like these really cool like enamel pins, right? Like,
yeah.
Can you just talk like a little bit about like where you got the idea to kind of like do this stuff and like how you approach that? Because that stuff, it sounds small, but like you are one of the few people that's ever sent me like, hey man, just want to say thanks. Cool little message. Wow. And here's the stuff. Like I know some people do it, but I feel like I get it a lot from like graphic designers or photographers or editors or studios I've worked with, but I don't see artists that want to be top of mind that like have like a style or a tone or vibe they want to tell people. Like, where did that come from? Did you see someone else do it? Did it come from outside of motion design? And you're like, man, this would be super cool. Like, how did that happen?
My dad at the time had owned a tile and grout construction company. and he sent out things to his clients. And he's also been my generic kind of mentor in terms of business, not necessarily anything creative, but I think I got it from there. And oh, that's cool. He did that. And then it's like, you forget and it doesn't happen. I mean, you really have to stay on top of it in order to get it out every year. You'd be surprised how quick it goes. Mm-hmm. But for me, it's another one of those, like, I just don't take this for granted. So it's like, I'm thankful for every client that wants to pay me sometimes tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars. It's like the least I can do is send them a card that I paid $1,200 for, all these cards and pins and send them out and just say, hey, I'm thinking about you guys and thank you so much. It's been a great year. Maybe next year, maybe not. And that's okay too. Like, I don't ever want it to feel like, oh, I need your work and I need you as a client and blah, blah, blah. It's more so, thanks so much. Here's my family. Here's a real life thing, a real life pin. That's another thing too, is like digital is so fun, but something different about a physical thing. And a pin is an easy version of that, right? A postcard and a pin. So yeah, that's where it came from. And then I just kept doing it. And I also started, giving them away I do like a giveaway at the end of the year for followers on Instagram as well.
Your giveaways are pretty intense though. You don't just give away your stuff. You give away like significant things, right?
Last year I did an iPad. Yeah.
that's like next level.
Yeah. And it sent to a girl in Brazil and she's an awesome illustrator and it was like life changing for her. And I don't mean to say that to sound cool. That wasn't my plan. It was just like, hey, I have the means and so many people don't, especially in 2020, that really the iPad was because of 2020. Mm-hmm. And I was like, dude, what can I do? Like I'm sitting pretty. I didn't have any hard times. My family's healthy. Just what can I do basically? And it wasn't a lot, but yeah, it helped somebody less fortunate. And that's really, really cool. And I plan to do it again just because I can. That's really it. It's just because I can. And I'm thankful for the support, and these people really do support me. And I don't know, that's something that I don't want to take for granted, I guess.
Well, I mean, I have to commend you because the cool thing about everything that Reese does, if you're listening to this, is that it doesn't come off as like a marketing game plan or spammy. It feels like it's a natural part of a conversation that you're having with clients or peers or collaborators or just someone that like you enjoy what they put out in the world, that's something that's really hard to capture, because you could, you know, very easily put this onto an Instagram carousel and be like, here's the 10 tips on how to make sure, like, but it doesn't, yeah. It doesn't feel like that. And I feel like it feels like a natural extension of just like the things you're interested in, right? Like, I love seeing your animations and like you're lacing up your skate shoe or you're, you know,
yeah, totally.
Like doing a kickflip, like whatever those things might be. It just, again, like in a really organic, true, like you use this word at the very beginning, and it's a shame this word's a buzzword, but it feels true to you. Like, it just feels very authentic to a person who's like, I love doing what I do.
Right.
I feel thankful for it. I want to keep doing it. See if we can do it together.
Well, that means a lot. Thank you for saying that. Yeah, I appreciate it.
It definitely comes off that way. And you know what? And it leads to this next question to me. Like, it makes me excited to figure out what it like excites you, right? Like, as a person or an artist, that like maybe there's something I don't know about you that I should be thinking about if I have another job that, oh man, I didn't realize, you know, if somehow if it still slipped my mind, Reese is into skateboarding and we have a Mountain Dew commercial and they want somebody to know skateboarding. Like, holy cow.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Those are great totally. Things. Those are great things to know, because I talk about this a little bit in Level Up and the Demoreal Dash class, but if you don't put out into the world the kinds of work or kinds of people you want to be associated with, there's no way for the world to know that. And it doesn't mean that it couldn't right. happen, but like then you really are just like relying on luck and the odds and the dice rolling your way. But if you just do simple things like this, like it increases your odds, right? It doesn't mean it's going to happen, but it's going to make it a lot easier that the stuff that excites you is going to find their way to you. So I want to ask you now, like outside of like, you have a lot of stuff to balance. You're balancing family, you're doing paid work, you have all these outside interests, you're doing all these other things. What excites you right now? Like, what is the stuff that you're like, oh man, I want to be involved with, you know, career-wise or just like hobbies or just, you know, everyday life?
Totally. It sounds silly, but something that's still really exciting is, you know, waking up in the morning, getting into the office and just seeing an inbox, like something new. Mm-hmm. And then maybe that leads to a cool project. Maybe it doesn't, but maybe it's the unknown or like the I don't know. It's like, you never know what's going to happen, mm-hmm. especially because I'm not necessarily seeking for these things. These things kind of right. come organically now. And there's just something really cool about that. And that's also like, most people don't understand how that happened. And I don't know that I would even be able to articulate how that's something that happened.
Right.
So yeah, that's still pretty cool. In terms of actually working, I really enjoy directing. And I kind of think of directing as like, there's two versions of it. There was the version of directing that I thought was directing when I started.
Yes.
And then there's the actual directing.
Yeah. Tell me the differences, because I want to see if they match up with my realizations once I got into that. Because it's very eye-opening when you start. Yeah,
absolutely. So early directing for me was, oh, I can do this. I'm cool. I know how to storyboard. I can do cool transitions. I can execute on kind of all of it. And then you do, and you think you're directing. Real directing, what I found out later, is client calls, client check-ins, articulating creative decisions, organizing kind of schedules and creative talent, managing and resourcing. I mean, that's sort of producer stuff too, but I think from top level, it's sort of all of these things. And then if you're lucky, maybe getting to kind of draw some things here, animate some things here.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, ideally, if you did your job right, it's like you have something that's, you know, greater than the sum of one, right? Which is really, really satisfying. And there's so much growth, especially from somebody that doesn't come from an organized background, let's say it that way, right? I have to figure out how to organize it myself. And that's a lot to learn, but also I'm ambitious in that way. So it's something that I like a challenge. And I think that rising to it has helped me immensely.
Yeah.
So yeah, you know, challenges in that way or something that really pushes what I'm capable of is satisfying and is exciting. Outside of work, you know, my kids, just hanging on my kids. I try to skateboard when I can still. I'm kind of lazy and fat now just because that's the nature.
I think you say that a lot on Instagram. You say it on social media. But if you go, the stuff you're able to pull off, well, A, let's talk about the office for a second. You don't have a very far commute to go from your office to being able to skate and do some pretty cool stuff. And
yeah.
B, you pull off some pretty good stuff for what you call yourself. I don't think that's very fair.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. Yeah, I'm grateful that I can still do it. I'm certainly not to the level where I have to like fully retire, which I'm thankful for. But I mean, it's all relative, right? You know, 7 years ago, I was like really, really hitting the pavement and kind of going all day long every day. And that's just something I can't do anymore. But maybe that's with age too. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the commute just right outside in the backyard. It's kind of a dream come true, honestly. The little half pipe and kind of these other little obstacles. Yeah, I don't know. It's something that I imagined as a kid. And it's just amazing that I was able to do it, honestly.
How did you come into this like studio? I mean, I saw the pictures when you moved and I saw like what looks like a shipping container show up. And then all of a sudden it goes from being kind of generic to looking like the coolest little office of all time. Like, where did that come from? Did that come from someone else that you saw? Or you're like, man, one day I just want to have this space that I can like wake up and roll into. Like, how did that all happen?
That was one of my like long-term goals early on was I want to be that guy that people know, but I don't have to be in New York. I don't have to be in California. Right. I don't have to be in studio. And so however really that manifested, and it turns out that it was some weird shipping container conversion. But the actual idea for that was from the builders. I was kind of brainstorming ideas on what I could pull off because I'm suburban born and raised. So I'm not somebody that really does the city thing. And I mean, I'm fine with it, but I don't love commuting either. I don't want to get up and drive an hour. So I was trying to figure out how to work out a studio space so that I could get away from the house, just a tiny bit, right? Just because kids are coming and life is getting more hectic, it just started to make more and more sense. So after learning that there's not much, like there isn't really all that great of space to rent in the suburbs, at least where I was at the time, I called around kind of some construction places and one of them just said, I have a shipping container. And at the time I had researched or, you know, just nonchalantly kind of run into, you know, the Netflix show and kind of YouTube series on tiny homes and tiny conversions and kind of all this other stuff. And I was like, that seems like something I could A, probably afford and B, you know, it's big enough for just me. I don't have to live in there and I never would. It's commendable, but that's not something I'm interested in. But it's just big enough for my thing, which is like a solo dude, freelancer, solo shop thing. Mm-hmm. So so I was like, okay. So I designed it just in Illustrator. Like I did my best to kind of be accurate with the actual scaling and here's what could fit and here's some ideas. And I just knew that it needed to be all black and I'll go from there.
Black and as many skeletons as you can fit.
Yep.
As many skulls as you can fit in one space. No, exactly. I mean, it's awesome. I mean, I think it's just like a cool conversation piece for clients if they discover you.
Totally.
Like, they'll be like, dude, tell me the story. How'd you do it? I mean, I think everybody wants a space like that, but having that's like such a nicely curated space that you can like literally black out or like do whatever you want to do in it is awesome. Thank you. I mean, now I want to get one too in my backyard. I have a big concrete pad that now I'm going to like research shipping containers. But
yes, sir.
I think all this goes back to now. Like we figured out like, cool, you're further along than you want to be. You're happy, maybe not satisfied. Maybe the listener that applies to you or doesn't, but maybe you've gotten a little bit just about how Reese's approach just his journey and like his discovery and how he meets people and has become a director. But I think this all goes back to the very beginning where we started. The big question, you're standing at a pinnacle, where to next?
Ooh, so
that was a big inhale.
I think going back to your umbrella theory of motion design is where my brain is going, Ryan. And I have some plans, but I can't reveal them yet. But a recent collaborator and I are planning something kind of unique and bigger. And what I will say is it's not a studio. Nothing against that. And that may be in my future, just probably not for the next few years. Yeah, that's probably all I can say for now, but I'm really, really excited about it.
You'll just have to come back on when you're ready to announce it.
Yes, the
bigger
sir.
Swings, collaborative. I love it.
Yes.
So, well, I just like Reese, I don't want to say thank you so much because I think just from the beginning, I think this industry needs more of us showing like vulnerability, showing like true honesty and not just trying to hype up like great clients and cool projects. Like those are all true, but that's what studios used to do. And studios weren't explaining at the same time how they were running nearly bankrupt or had to delay paying people, right? Like I've worked at a lot of the shops. I've seen all the horror stories. I've seen all the great things that can happen. Studios are not, it's not in their vested interest to explain all that stuff, but I think it does a disservice to everyone trying to find their way if we don't do that as people, because it's really easy to get caught up in the bright lights and, like I say, stargazing at what everybody talks about you should be. But until you actually hear, you know, like I love talking about failure. It's been very hard for me to get to that point, but now that I've done it a couple of times, I love telling people where I totally screwed up and hearing like you, where like from the outside seems wildly successful, but that's still true, but there's still some confusion or consternation or trying to understand like, just What do you do next?
Absolutely.
I encourage people listening to this to do that themselves in whatever small way you can, whether it's like what Reese did, you know, posting a picture and saying something. Like, all you have to do is look at this post and read the responses, that there's something positive about talking about, you know, when you feel like this. If it's getting on Twitter, if it's going to a meetup whenever we all can, and just talking to people and seeing that there are a lot of people who feel the same way you do, it is not bad. It is positive to talk about, you know, these feelings, these confusions, these failures, whatever they might be. So, Reese, I just want to say thank you so much. That we don't necessarily know where we're going, but like you said, I think really well at the very end of this, you don't have the answers, but you know you'll get there. Thank you, Reese. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me, Ryan. I appreciate it.
Well, there you have it, Motioneers. In a world full of so many pressures, so many places to post your work, so many new tools to try to learn, you're not alone. Even someone as talented and as storied of a career as someone like Reese Parker, an amazing animator, illustrator, animation director, he doesn't necessarily know where to go next either. And you know what? That's okay. We're all kind of making this up as we go, aren't we? Well, that's just another reason why we're here for you with the School of Motion podcast, to introduce you to new people, to inspire you, and to help you on your journey in your career. Until next time, peace.